If I bleed tonight, if I am sad tonight, I don't have a job to find. And if I work tonight, if I'm so tired tonight, I'll fall asleep when I'm home. When I'm Hey everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Power Slam podcast here on Inside the Ropes. My name is Kenny McIntosh, joined as always by my mentor, my partner in crime, the Thelma to my Louise, Finn Martin. Hey Finn, how are you?
I'm really good, yeah. Really good, Kenny. How's yourself?
I'm good. I thought I would do a nice Thelma and Louise reference from 1990, not a Dumb and Dumber reference from 2006, which actually came out in 1994.
Dumb and Dumber referencing on Raw this week?
Yeah, that's the reference. So they referenced Dumb and Dumber and then said that was so 2006, which was actually the year that the sequel came out, not the year that the original came out. Dumb and Dumberer, yeah, that's it. Good God. I remember...
I think I did see the original.
The original was great. I loved that movie. I remember, like, so I would have been like 10. It was January 95. I would have turned 10. And I remember, you know, pleading with my mum for us to drive across Glasgow to every video shop, like Global Video and Ritz and all these different places to try and see if we could buy an ex-rental copy of Dumb and Dumber. And we got one, but it used to be that the ex-rental copies that you would buy, the video case was like 5 inches bigger than every other video case of like a regular VHS that you bought.
Yeah, I remember.
Those were the days, Finney.
Those were the days.
VHS.
I mean, all that plastic that ended up in landfill. I mean, hopefully it ended up in the hard plastic section and was recycled into God knows what. But
I don't think you should think about it.
Hopefully it had another life.
But we will be talking about Raw actually on the overrun, but we've got loads to talk about here in the main podcast. It has been a big weekend, a big week of wrestling, that there's so much to get into. I guess let's start, Finn. Let's just jump in with I wanted to ask you about this because a lot of people talk about it every week. You know, the Wednesday night wars and AEW and NXT always provokes the conversation about ratings that comes up and who wins and who loses and all this kind of stuff. So last week on the July 15th, Fight for the Fallen show for AEW and NXT regular show for them, AEW walked out with 788,000 viewers with an increase of 10%, and NXT had 631,000 viewers with a drop of almost 17%. But the demo, the 18 to 49 demographic of viewers was 0.29 for AEW and 0.14 for NXT. And you hear a lot of times that, you know, and AEW tend to talk about this more, I guess, that, you know, that the 18 to 49 demo is the demo that people want. That's the demo that advertisers want. That's the demo that you want to go after. And that's the demo that you want to be winning. And we saw Chris Jericho doing the demo god gimmick on AEW. How important is the 18 to 49 demo? Is that something that is the key thing for them to be thinking about? Like, for people who maybe just listen to ratings and kind of go, is the 18 to 49 demo important? What's your take on it?
I think it is. I mean, if people, like, when NXT defeated AEW for, was it 2 or 3 weeks running? Was it 3 weeks running?
It was definitely the two. I think it was it three? They definitely beat them in the two, the Great American Bash and Fighter Fest weeks. I'll just look up the other one while you talk.
Yeah. Well, when NXT, after NXT had beaten Dynamite in the ratings, the total number of viewers, Chris Jericho made a point of stating on his podcast, didn't he, that yes, NXT had won, but the important thing is that AEW did better in the 1849 demographic. Mm-hmm. And that was a point that he was emphasizing. And he was knocked for that, of course, for not conceding defeat. And of course, he's, well, of course, NXT did win, but we really won. So it's kind of a bit mealy-mouthed, wasn't it, really, what he was saying? But, I mean, it's not like Chris Jericho is an independent observer. I mean, he's a member of AEW, so of course he's going to put that spin on it. I mean, I think it is important. I think the fact that people bring it up and talk about it so much, and not just Chris Jericho. I'm talking about people who are capable of objectivity in pro wrestling. Actually, not that many of them, is there, Kenny, really? You and I, of course. So, I mean, the fact that it is brought up on a regular basis and that it is something that advertisers look at, then yes, I think it is important. It's not something that I've ever really dwelled on that much, if I'm honest with you. But when it gets down to the, mainly because I haven't placed an advert on a wrestling program, but I think when it comes down to the nitty-gritty, in all seriousness, I think it really does matter to the advertisers. Absolutely it does. So, I mean, and also they wouldn't include this information in the ratings if it wasn't important. I think it's that simple. So, yes, it does matter. What do you think, Kenny? What's your opinion on things?
I think it must matter because I think that for, you know, people, I know somebody had asked you, I can't remember if it was on Facebook or in the Q&A that you did, but somebody asked you recently about would wrestling have another boom period? Do you remember that question that somebody asked you about?
Yes, I do, yeah.
And I
spent a very long time coming up with that answer, and you may not have realised that by reading it. It's actually a very, very difficult question to answer. And not to just, you know, with a cop-out answer, to try and come up with something original that has some sort of, you know, meaning or, you know, it's got some merit to it or some, it's not just a cop-out answer. Because, of course, we don't know if there will be, but I had to try and answer the question.
And I think to your point about it, is I think for there to be another boom period, I think that it has to be a younger audience who pushes that through. It has to be somebody who gets over with a younger audience. And I think that, you know, when I kind of look at ratings and stuff, I don't know enough about ratings to wax lyrical for hours on end. I know enough to get by in listening to people talk about it and to kind of get by having a conversation about it. But I think that the worrying stat for me for WWE is that their main audience is over 50s. And what that really says is that they've not been able to sort of penetrate through to that 18 to 49 demographic as much in the last 5 years or so. And, you know, there was a thing that, it was on Reddit that I was shown the other day that I thought was interesting. Do you remember that promo that Triple H did on Raw? And it was like, he was in the Authority and he was talking about, you know, you people at home complaining, you and your friend Mark, will be taught, you know, what you will say you'll change the channel but you won't, and it was basically kind of making fun of people who say they're going to stop watching and they won't, kind of thing. And the person who had posted that on Reddit had went and found that specific episode of Raw and found the rating and the demo they had compared to now. And now I may be getting this wrong because I don't have it right in front of me, but something like the 18 to 49 demo on that episode of Raw was like 3.4 or something, and they had like almost 4 million viewers at that point. Or no, it was 4.43 million viewers at that point, 6 years ago. And that was when he had said that, 4.43 million viewers with a 3.48 demo of 18 to 49. Now, this past week, what was the rating for Raw? Or Raw last week? They had like 1.6 million viewers or something. And the demo for 18 to 49 was like 0.35.
Yeah, I mean, way down. Like, what's like about a third, less than, like about a third of the viewers that they had when he cut the famous promo.
So, I mean, in that sense, you're looking at a lot of young people are not watching. And I think that's because I remember CM Punk had said a thing before where he said, you know, I'm 34 years old and I don't know what's cool. So if you're 70, how are you going to know what's cool? So you have to have people who are, you have to have new ideas coming in. And I think that the worry I think is in terms of the 1849 thing is if you don't have a good grasp of those people, then it's not going to stand you in good stead. So I think that's maybe where the worry should come in. But at the same time with AEW, as much as they do have a good demo, their numbers aren't going up hugely.
No.
Overall, and that's a problem because, you know, they're not at a million yet. And would they have got to a million had COVID not happened? We could speculate in that all. And, you know, your favorite sayings, hindsight is 2020 or whatever. So we won't know. But
everyone's
I think
a smart ass in hindsight.
Everyone's a smart ass in hindsight. So I think for me, WWE have some issues that they really need to look at with their demos and making the shows more appealing to younger people. And then AEW have an issue where they need to get more general audience finding and checking out the show.
Yeah. I mean, with AEW, to me, a lot of it just really seems to be targeted to quite a hardcore audience. There's a lot of in jokes and inside stuff, and it doesn't feel to me like, I think it's going to be difficult for it to reach a wider audience than it's currently attracting. I mean, you're right about the NXT last week. If you look at the breakdown of NXT, it was like 0.36 in the over 50s. And that is kind of odd, really, with NXT, because you would think that that would be a program that would appeal to a younger audience, because most of the performers are younger. So it is unusual, isn't it, that NXT, which to me, as soon as you put that on, this is aimed at a younger audience, because overall it's a younger crew of performers, that it's appealing to an older crowd. So, yeah, I mean, they've both got work to do. I mean, we know that. I mean, it's a terrible week for NXT, for WWE last week. I mean, obviously, Raw drew its lowest ever viewing figures. NXT, as you said, down to 631,000 viewers on Wednesday. And then I think SmackDown did its lowest numbers since it moved to Fox. Did like under 1.9 million viewers for SmackDown on Friday, Kenny, on the 17th.
Not ideal.
I mean, the horror show, as I said last week, the horror show was not Extreme Rules. It was the viewing figures that this company drew on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. I mean, if that's not going to, I mean, that should have been an earthquake in WWE HQ, those numbers. I mean, if they are not responding to those numbers, then mind you, looking at Raw, didn't really feel like there was a massive response on Raw, did it? Really?
It feels like the response that they're doing is by providing on TV what they feel are the big matches. You know, so like Big Show versus Randy Orton is supposed to be a big match. I just don't know. Does Big Show pop a rating nowadays for a match with Randy Orton? I mean, it wouldn't be something that would make me tune in if I wasn't already watching. But I mean, is there an argument for that we're not thinking of?
Well, I think with it being the day after Extreme Rules and with them promoting Big Show versus Randy Orton in an unsanctioned match, I am sure that this week's Raw will have drawn a larger viewing audience than the previous week's Raw. I mean, if it didn't, then my God, they really are in trouble. But it just seemed to me to be a match that was thrown out there to draw a one-week rating. Obviously, the run-up to it, the hype for it, did not deliver in the viewing figures department. And we will find out later today. It's Tuesday as we record this. We'll find out later today what Raw's numbers were. But I'm sure, I'm convinced, surely they will be higher than they were last week. But I mean, that's the end of the feud, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, Big Show and Randy Orton is now over, thankfully. So what, you know, quite where this leaks Randy Orton, you know, after this huge push that he's received over the last few weeks, ever since the Edge match, I'm not quite sure what he does next. So even though the Big Show feud's over, where exactly has this led him? I guess maybe Drew McIntyre at SummerSlam, but I mean, that was not obvious from Raw, was it?
No, it wasn't. But I mean, yeah, they've got work to do. The other thing is when we get to, like, is it not September when like the football season starts again and all that kind of stuff, and then it's like they've got more competition.
Yeah.
So
absolutely,
it's funny because I do wonder what it would need to get to before they go right. Let's, because I mean, Paul Heyman was let go, and who would you blame now if it gets too low? Who's the next person you go, right, we're gonna, this is gonna be the
Bruce next?
Maybe it's Bruce. Maybe. Yeah, I would be concerned if I was him. Before we talk about SmackDown and the pay-per-view, dear God, Impact had Slammiversary on Saturday night, yeah. And they actually had a lot of buzz coming out of the show. PW Insider reported today that they've had really strong online pay-per-view numbers for the show. Strongest it's been in ages. A lot of the news coming at the show seemed to be more about who turned up. I mean, the opening match with the Rascals and the returning Motor City Machine Guns people were raving about that match, but the rest of it seemed to be people raving about, you know, who appeared. But I mean, did you think the opening match was up to the sort of buzz that it's been receiving?
Yeah, it was. I really enjoyed it. It was very well done. I must confess that I haven't watched all of Slammiversary yet. But I mean, really did enjoy that match, and the right people went over. Chris Sabin, Alex Shelley went over in that match, and absolutely right that they should have gone over since they were returning. But yeah, lots of people talking about Slammiversary. Great to see Don Callis back. Don Callis and Josh Matthews on commentary. You know, I thought Madison Rayne did a really good job in the interim. I thought her, you know, banter with Josh Matthews, obviously they're married in real life. You know, they don't acknowledge that on the air. But I mean, I thought they were a lot of fun as a commentary team. But I think, you know, Don and Josh Matthews, that's the A commentary team in Impact Wrestling. So it was, yeah, a really lively start to the show. And lots of positive conversation about Impact Wrestling. I mean, remember, it's some weeks back now, isn't it, that they put out that video in which they hinted that a number of former WWE contractors might turn up at Slammiversary because their 90-day no-compete would be up by then. And quite a few of those names did show up at Slammiversary, didn't they, Kenny?
They did. So I was going to ask you just about the kind of the names that showed up. And I mean, let's just go through them in terms of who you think what they can contribute to Impact going forward. We did see the former Heath Slater, who I think is going to be known as Heath Miller.
Heath Miller, yeah.
In Impact. And he basically came out and said he's going to, you know, see Rhino on Tuesday on TV. So I guess they're kind of going to maybe go down the Rhino-Heath partnership. What do you think Heath can offer to Impact, and do you think that's a good fit for him?
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, he came back on Raw a couple of weeks ago and you know, gave an impassioned promo. I think we both complimented him on his verbal performance on the stick that night. Obviously, he lost very quickly to Drew McIntyre, but I think he showed a lot on the mic that night. And that was a real endorsement of him, even though he lost so quickly. I think he really showed, you know, a real fire and a desire to be fire and desire. You know, just having flashbacks to Mandy and Sonya. Whatever happened to those two, by the way? We haven't seen them on SmackDown in weeks. So, I mean, I thought Heath did a really good job on Raw that night, and stood him in good stead for this move to Impact Wrestling. I think he can do a lot there. I think people know that he's capable of more than WWE allowed him to do. I think that's fair to say. I mean,
he's funny. He can do a lot of comedy. He's also, I think that the Rhino thing is going to be interesting to see whether they, you know, do you revisit a four year ago partnership? Does it still have some legs to it? But I think he's going to have the kind of the freedom to be a bit more himself, and hopefully that's going to make him feel more relevant than he did in WWE for the last few years.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, but as we saw from that segment on Raw, we've known for years that he can do comedy. And as he showed in that segment on Raw, he can do the serious stuff as well. And, you know, that phrase I just used, you know, to describe, people are aware that he can do more than WWE would allow him to do. I mean, that applies to so many people. Who currently work there, never mind the people who work there and were released from the contracts back in April. So I think he's somebody who can really, I think he's got a lot to offer, and I think Impact will give him, you know, the opportunity to do that.
And then the main event, which was an elimination match for the vacant Impact World title, we knew that Eddie Edwards, Trey Miguel, Ace Austin and Rich Swann were in the match, but there was somebody else and it turned out to be Eric Young. So Eric Young is back. He ended up being eliminated first. Eric Young's a tough one, right? Because he went to WWE and he really became, by the end, a nothing performer. So
yes. Is
it too late for him to come back and reinvent himself and become, I don't want to keep using the word relevant, but a relevant part of pro wrestling again in 2020? Where's Eric Young's place on Impact now?
I don't know. I mean, it's tough for Eric Young. I mean, there's going to have to be a lot of rebuilding work there. I mean, you know, if Eric Young was a house, he was completely demolished by WWE. So, I mean, they've got to start from the foundations and build up again. So, I mean, if you go back to when he was in TNA, TNA made him champion. I think it was actually, was it right after Daniel Bryan became champ at WrestleMania 30? I think it was, because Eric was the underdog and the guy that they never thought would become champ, and then TNA made him champ. I think it was right after Daniel Bryan won the belt, or right before. It was around about the time anyway. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of a bit pathetic, really, to see Eric used in this fashion. And TNA at that point was just, you know, copying almost everything WWE did or had been doing that. I mean, it wasn't doing much original work at that time. And I really felt sorry for Eric Young. He's a guy who'd been in that company for a long time. He'd been a comedy performer and had really worked his way up to a point where, you know, he was somebody that you could take a little bit more seriously. But they kind of rushed him into the title picture, and it just didn't feel like it had really been earned. I mean, it was earned in a sense that, yeah, he'd been there a long time, but it just felt like, you know, let's make this guy champ and try and, you know, piggyback on this Daniel Bryan thing, this underdog story. And it just, you know, I thought it was a real disservice to Eric Young, really, for a guy that had a lot of talent. He could have had his own story, and instead TNA borrowed the Daniel Bryan story from WWE, and it was so transparent that they had. So,
and you can't really do, like, because the thing with the Daniel Bryan story was, because it was such a great story and it was such a great kind of stadium WrestleMania end, you can't really, anything you do is going to be a failure compared to that. Like, you can't live up to that. You can't exceed the expectations of that story when it's so fresh in everyone's mind.
Well, exactly. When it's, you know, it's derivative, it's just like, well, no, come up with something new, come up with something fresh. Don't do it now. You know, come up with a journey, you know, come up with his story to the title. Don't just do it now and, you know, to try and, you know, with the interest that is in Daniel Bryan, to try and absorb some of that, you know, through association. You're just going to look like wannabes. So, but Eric Young, yeah, he ended up leaving, going to the WWE system. He was in Sanity, wasn't he, in NXT? I mean, they were an act that I always kind of felt could have done more than they did. And then they moved him over to the main roster. And I don't think Vince was ever sold on them from the very start. And in short order, he was doing jobs. That act did not get a chance on the main roster. And as you said, by the end, he was just a nobody. He just meant nothing. In many ways, going back to Impact Wrestling for Eric Young, I mean, it is a fresh start for him. I mean, there's no way that he can do anything worse than what he did in WWE, because he was like the invisible man by the end. So, I mean, it's like, I think the analogy of the house that's been completely demolished is an accurate analogy. It's just like, right, okay, well, you can start again with this guy. Whatever you choose to do, you know, it's up to you to make this work. You know, in many ways, you know, you could say, well, you've got the wreckage there, but you can rebuild this guy. I mean, he's obviously in great shape. He does have talent. I'm not quite sure what they're going to do with him. But we know that Eric can do lots of different things. You know, he can play a lot of different characters. And maybe, you know, you would hope that he would like to prove to Impact and their audience and the wider wrestling audience that WWE dropped the ball with him like it did with EC3, you're going to be bringing him up in a moment, like they did with EC3, and that he was better, and that he had more to offer than WWE, you know, recognized. WWE just did not recognize his talent, and didn't really give him a chance, especially when he got on the main roster. What do you think, Kenny, about Eric Young?
He's got the biggest hill to climb. I liked Sanity in NXT, but like you say, when they got in the main roster, they were never behind them in the main roster, so he just became nothing. And I think he's the biggest challenge to make feel like a star again.
Yeah.
So, but you know what? Look, the thing is, the brutal honest part of it is nobody else was going to take him. He was only going to get to go to Impact, and you know, he did a lot for Impact. He was there a long time. He worked really hard for years with them. So I feel like they've, you know, they've brought him back and they've kind of given him a chance. So see if he runs with it. See what he does with it. Yeah. And then, like you say, EC3 and the Good Brothers, Karl Anderson and Luke Gallows, they both showed up at the end of the show. And yeah, so I mean, Gallows and Anderson, they did a pretty explosive interview with Ryan Satin last week, where they basically said that, you know, they regret not going to AEW. There was a deal ready for them. They were going to debut at the end of the first Dynamite. They were going to, you know, turn in the Young Bucks. There was a big program planned from the right away. They regret it. Young Bucks were very pissed off at sort of, you know, what happened. They feel Paul Heyman was the reason that they were fired. So they did a pretty explosive interview in the lead up to the show, which I thought was quite a clever move for them to do. Yeah. You've got people talking about them. Any thoughts on anything that they said? And also, what do you think of them and Impact? I know we talked about it a little bit before, but you know, they've made their debut. So what do you think the chances of success are?
Yeah, I think they're going to do really well there. I'm sure they'll become champs. I mean, I think they're a big part of this. Impact right now just feels like it's going somewhere for the first time in probably a few years. There's new talent there. There's more interest than there's been in many years in the company. I think they've got a really good cast of characters there. They haven't got too many performers. I mean, that's obviously one of the disadvantages of Impact Wrestling in recent months is that probably the best part of 2 years, actually, is that the talent roster has been quite thin. But I mean, everyone who works there is used pretty much to the best of their ability, because, you know, there's no one left on the sidelines. There's no flab. There's no excess talent who's sitting around waiting for a shot. And I think Karl Anderson and Luke Gallows will be another couple of guys like Eric Young who will have something to prove, you know, not only to WWE, but possibly to themselves and to the wider wrestling audience, that yes, they have a lot to offer a wrestling company, and any wrestling company that's going to give them the time and, you know, the freedom to show what they can do, they're gonna go out there and prove that they've got what it takes to be players and to be stars and to really sizzle in front of, well, obviously not in front of the audience because there's no fans present, but you know what I mean. I think in Impact Wrestling right now, all these guys are coming in there and they've been sat at home for 3 months. They weren't really doing much prior to that in WWE. I'm sure there was a lot of frustration. I mean, do you remember that video that EC3 put out there, Kenny, after he'd been cut from his contract? I think you ended up retweeting that one. And he was saying that, you know, no one's going to write the narrative for me now. It's up to me. You know, no one's going to hold me back. No one's going to prevent me from showing the world what I can do. And you would hope that Anderson and Gallows and Eric Young and Heath Miller, they're going into Impact, you know, energized, you know, enthusiastic, you know, and eager to prove that they can make a difference to this company. And, you know, it's obviously a company that's been downtrodden and has kind of fallen off the radar in recent years. I never lost the faith, of course, but a lot of other people did. And I think they're there now, and I think they can really make a difference and make Impact relevant again to more people.
I hope that I know they didn't have a crowd at Slammiversary. I hope that they can get something where there's people at ringside, because I really do think that adds so much to the shows to be able to have, you know, even socially distant people with masks on,
yeah,
making some noise. It just will make the world a difference. And I think that if they're gonna, if people are tuning in to, I think it's tonight because their TV's on a Tuesday night. Then,
yeah,
I hope that they've figured out that was probably something that was missing from the pay-per-view, was just a bit of atmosphere.
I think one thing that's very underrated about Impact Wrestling is the booking team, who I think are really sharp. They're really switched on. They know what they're doing. They know how to bring people in. They know how to bring them along slowly. And they know how to make stars. And yes, that is a shot at AEW. You know, look at, you know, Kylie Rae. Look at what she's done since she got there. I mean, she has been tremendous in Impact Wrestling. And she, I mean, she could have been, you know, the star of that women's division in AEW. Because she did work for AEW briefly, didn't she, Kenny?
She did, and then she left. I actually do need to, I need to bring this up in the interest of fairness. Some people have questioned a comment of yours from last week's podcast, when you had said that, you know, we were talking about Finn Balor, weren't we? And you'd said, you know, AEW can't make stars. That was one of the things that you'd said. And people had kind of put lists up on Facebook about, you know, because I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, the people that you were really talking about were like Brody Lee, Matt Hardy, Sean Spears, right? The people who've come in and not really done anything.
Yeah, Lance Archer.
Lance Archer, right.
What about Brian Cage?
Right, so those are the people, and I think what other people were saying was, well, Moxley's done really well, Jericho's done really well, Cody's done really well. So is it a case of what your point is that everybody's making out like AEW, if you go there, it's great. That's not the case. It's more of a 50-50 ratio of whether you're going to succeed or not.
Well, I don't even know whether it's 50-50. I mean, I thought when they brought FTR in, I thought that first match they had with the Butcher and the Blade, I thought the Butcher and the Blade looked better than FTR. I was like, who's supposed to be the stars here? It's just like, and like that match where they teamed up with the Young Bucks and then they lost. It's like, why are they losing? So, yeah, I think AEW, when it comes to booking, I watch that show and I'm just like, what's going on here? What is going on here? I think Impact Wrestling, when it comes to making stars and using them correctly, I have a hell of a lot more faith in Impact Wrestling than I do in AEW.
I mean, so I like AEW, so I wouldn't agree with everything, but I think the one thing that I would agree with is that there is a trend of big guys who come in who fight the champion and they lose and they don't really do anything afterwards.
Exactly.
Brody Lee and Brody Lee and such.
Yeah. Brian Cage, when he came into Impact Wrestling, they brought him along slowly. It was a very slow process before he became champion and was put in main events, and they immediately booked him in this feud with John Moxley. You know, gave him Taz as a manager. I mean, my God. And then, you know, tell us what happened the last week's Dynamite, Kenny, with Brian Cage and John Moxley.
Taz threw in the towel because Brian Cage. I mean, it was a clever finish, but it did have Brian Cage lose and. I guess we'll see. I mean, I think now he's in a feud with Darby Allin. At least he's going into something. I feel better about that one than I do about Lance Archer and Brody Lee, who have both lost their big title matches and don't seem to be doing much now.
Yeah, almost straight away. I mean, you don't book them in the big match immediately. You know, that's after a sequence of wins. Then they have the big match. You build them up. I mean, how difficult is it? I mean, the Cage thing, it's just like you don't book him against John Moxley and then have him lose in his first feud. I mean, on Dynamite a couple of weeks ago, Lance Archer needed a distraction from Jake Roberts in order to defeat Joey Janela, for Christ's sake.
Yeah, and I think
it just went on and on. It's like, what's Lance Archer doing? Needing all these minutes to beat Joey Janela, this indie. I mean, this guy's a joke. So
I think it's a fair point. I mean, there is a lot of AEW do get a lot of passes from a lot of people for a lot of stuff.
They're not getting any from me, Kenny.
They're getting none from you. I like some of the stuff, but I mean, one of the biggest disappointments for me is Matt Hardy, because he came in. Well, I liked when he came in. I liked the build up to the Stadium Stampede. I thought the Stadium Stampede was great, but since then he's just been doing next to nothing. And I think that he, you know, especially in this era where it's like you can do vignettes and stuff, who would be better at vignettes than Matt Hardy?
I just don't get it. He's like there as a mentor for a Private Party, isn't he?
And it's just, that connection doesn't work. No. Anyway, so we'll move on. Let's talk about SmackDown. So SmackDown happened. It was the go home for Extreme Rules. We had on the show, the main event was Matt Riddle. Getting a shot at the Intercontinental title against AJ Styles. AJ Styles would get the win. And then post-match, King Corbin attacked Matt Riddle. And it seems like we're heading towards Corbin versus Riddle. What did you make of the match and the decision to have them seemingly go in a, we don't know how long it's going to be for, but seemingly in a Corbin-Riddle direction?
Well, this is, I mean, obviously Riddle had scored the win over Styles in the non-title match. So, you know, this isn't quite Brian Cage bad, but I can see that some people may be looking for a contradiction now from Finlay, and they may find one. So had I been writing this down, there wouldn't be any contradictions, but because I'm speaking, I will probably end up contradicting myself. I enjoyed the match. I don't think it was as good as the first one because that had a better atmosphere with all the people surrounding the ring. And obviously it was Matt Riddle's first match on SmackDown, so it's very hard to replicate something like that in terms of atmosphere. And also with it being the shock that Riddle had won and Styles sold the loss really well, and it just seemed like, you know, a huge turning point for Matt Riddle. I think it probably would have been too soon for him to win the IC title, but had he won, I would not have objected to it.
Also, it's the thing of don't put the guy in the big match straight away.
Yes.
Because it's... I mean, I think the difference is that if this had been... If coming out of it with it being Riddle and Corbin, it's... You just feel a bit, ugh.
Exactly.
Corbin.
I mean, it should have been Corbin first. I mean... So,
I mean, you know, could have beat Corbin here and then AJ comes out and attacks him because he beat AJ, you know?
Absolutely. Or maybe AJ was 3 months down the line and then you've got a proper feud and at that point you can decide whether or not you make Riddle champ. So it just kind of feels like they've sort of Brian Caged Matt Riddle. I don't think it's quite as bad as that, but it's definitely similar. So it seems to me like they've done this in the wrong order, you know, very AEW-like. So, yeah, I enjoyed the match, but, you know, what I did like at the end was after Styles won, Styles was there, you know, impressed by Riddle's performance, ends up extending his hand. Obviously, Styles is a heel, Riddle's babyface. They shake hands, and at that point, Corbin runs in, clobbers Riddle from behind, beats him down, so now it's going to be Riddle-Corbin, which feels anticlimactic after Riddle versus Styles. I mean, no doubt Riddle will win this feud. So, it's going to be a, you know, rehabilitation program for him. So it's, you know, it could be worse, I guess. But there is, yeah, something, you know, it's tinged with disappointment, Kenny. That's, I think, the nicest way I can put it. Just feels like they just rushed him into this program.
It does. It feels rushed that it's... I think that I don't particularly have a huge problem that he didn't win the title. I have more of an issue that it leads us to Baron Corbin and Matt Riddle. I did want to ask you though. I mean, there's not a lot to talk about.
It just feels like filler, doesn't it? Corbin versus Riddle. It's just filler programming. And WWE right now, I mean, this is Finlay stating the obvious, does not need any more filler programming at the moment.
No, they do not. I do want to. They've moved Jeff Hardy and Sheamus, the bar fight, to next week on SmackDown to try and pop a rating rather than putting on Extreme Rules. So we saw Sheamus attack Jeff Hardy backstage on the show. I mean, I'm just ready for this feud to end as soon as possible. But I did want to ask you because there was something that happened on SmackDown ended up creating a bit of a buzz online. Lacey Evans had beaten Naomi after last week's karaoke segment, which, to your point, we don't have Mandy and Sonya, but we had the karaoke segment. And now there was a kind of hashtag for Naomi deserves better. And it always seems like Naomi comes up as someone who people say, Naomi is decent. She should, you know, she's different. She should get more of an opportunity than she gets. And she does always seem to get overlooked. Why do you think that they don't seem to ever really pull the trigger on Naomi and go with her?
I'll tell you why, Kenny. What has Naomi done that is exceptional? I'll start again. What has Naomi done that is exceptional or out of the ordinary? I mean, really, what has she done? I mean, you look at Sasha Banks and Bayley and Charlotte and Rhea Ripley and prior to that, Ronda Rousey, you know, and Io Shirai and many other performers in the system who've gone out there and absolutely blown people away with their matches. When has Naomi done that? I don't recall her ever having a match that you would ever really want to watch twice or a match that you'd really say, wow, that was something special. I mean, I think she has a routine worked out and she does do some things well. But, you know, she's been in this company now for nearly 10 years. She came in the women's NXT season, didn't she?
2010. I think she did, and then she was a Funkadactyl.
That's right, yeah. But it's 2010, I'm sure, she made her debut. She was part of the women's NXT along with Caitlin and AJ Lee and... I can't remember the names of the other people on the that program escaped me, but Naomi was definitely there. So she's been there a long time now, and I can't really think of a match that she's had that's really blown me away. But yeah, I was aware of the hashtag, and I think Charlotte chimed in, and I think she seconded it. And she was like, yes, Naomi deserves better. I don't know. I can't see, like, for instance, let's just say that she was booked in a program with Bayley or Sasha Banks starting next week. Would their match be as good as the matches that Sasha and Bayley have been having with other people? I don't think they would be.
For me, I think that her being there so long is something that's definitely hindering the attempt. I think that Naomi's got a good personality and she's decent enough in the ring that I would say it's worth doing something with. I think the problem is that she's been around for so long, and it's like once you've been around for so long, you just kind of get overlooked. But like, as an example, I would rather see the Naomi character on TV than Natalia any day of the week, because I just think Naomi's a little bit more interesting. She's not as... I mean, because people always talk about Natalia, she's such a great wrestler. She's okay. Natalia is okay. She's not great. And I don't know, maybe I've missed some Natalia stuff in the past that was great, but I've been struggling to fucking find it, Finn, for about a decade.
Natalia is somebody who can have a really solid match. She can have with the right opponent, she's actually pretty good in the ring, I think. I mean, I enjoyed that mini program she had with Shayna Baszler early in the year. I remember she had that really good match with Becky Lynch at SummerSlam last year, I think it was.
It was okay. I think the thing is, Natalia is better in the ring than Naomi, but I think Naomi is a more interesting performer. Like,
I agree. I think Naomi is a very likable person. I think she's a very likable character, and I think they can do more with her, maybe in a tag team. I just don't think she's an exceptional in-ring performer. She's not at the standard of Sasha.
Yeah, maybe a team is the way to go, because I mean the thing is, like, from watching a lot of Total Divas and stuff, Naomi's very charismatic on that show, or has been. So I think she could be good at promos, but maybe a tag team is the way to go. Maybe that's the way to use more Naomi, get it out there more. I mean, please, dear God, don't bring back Ariana, the other Funkadactyl. Please no. Let's leave her out of it forever. Girl bye, I think would be my response to her coming back. But maybe there's somebody.
I mean, the fact that people are championing her call shows that she's very liked, very well liked backstage as well.
Yeah, Big E was another one who was coming out and sort of saying, you know, Naomi's great. She really should get more opportunity to do stuff, because, you know, if Lana has been in the spot of getting opportunities, then I think Naomi could do something as well. So
I mean the thing is, you know, we were burying Bayley, weren't we, on this podcast for about two and three quarter years, and then she suddenly stepped up and showed us what she had. And like, Naomi needs to have one of those moments. She needs this breakout moment to really show us what she's got, if she does have anything more that we haven't seen yet. Obviously, what we've seen from Bayley over the last couple of months has been a revelation, and don't need to discuss. We'll probably be talking about that later in this podcast. But I mean, she is really shone in this current role that she has, and she's really good in the ring as well. I think she's really shown how, I'm watching some of her matches recently, just how underrated. I mean, the match she had with Nikki Cross on SmackDown, I thought Bayley's selling of that was some of the best selling on the entire program. You know, that was just like, actually, what am I talking about? That was on the damn Extreme Rules.
The pay-per-view, we're just about to get to that.
That's right. Yeah, Nikki Cross and Bayley was on the Extreme Rules pay-per-view. I thought she did a tremendous job with Nikki Cross in that match. But Bayley in general is always good in the ring. I think she always really shines as an in-ring performer, and she always makes her opponents look better as well. And it is possible, if she were booked in a program with Naomi and they were given more than 3 or 4 minutes, they could have a really good match as well. And maybe that will happen. Hopefully it will happen. You know, I mean, you know, I just don't think Naomi has really shown me that she's a really good in-ring performer. You know, she hasn't shown me that yet. If she is, well, you know, by all means, WWE, put her in a situation where she can really shows what she's got, because I haven't seen it yet that she's at the level of some of the elite female performers in this company.
Well, look, let's move on to the pay-per-view, because there wasn't really anything else on SmackDown that's worth us really going through. So we had the horror show at Extreme Rules. It was a slog, Finn. It was a real slog.
It was only a 2.5 hour show as well. Can you imagine if these shows were like 4 hours like they used to be?
Oh, good God. Okay, let's just get through it. Did you watch the kickoff show?
I didn't, no.
Okay, the Kevin Owens-Murphy match was actually pretty good. I will give them that. They had a good match. And they also had a segment on the kickoff show where the New Day were talking about the tables match they were going to be in, and Devon Dudley came up. And all I can really say is he's looking in Taz shape. And I mean 2020 Taz shape. So we opened the show with the New Day against Nakamura and Cesaro in the tables match to the SmackDown Tag Team titles. And Nakamura and Cesaro actually won the titles in the tables match in about 10 minutes with a big spot at the end where Cesaro powerbombs Kingston through two tables for the win. Yeah. What did you make of the match? And was this the right decision to put the belts on Cesaro and Nakamura?
I was expecting more from the match. I mean, these are obviously really competent teams, really proficient teams. But I thought the match would be better. It just seemed, I think, I was kind of hoping, because the ending came after one person was put through a table, right, Kenny? Not both team members?
Yeah, I don't know if they've just, I mean, I guess the rules are made to be changed.
Like years ago, it was always you had to put both members.
Yeah, it was both. Well, I'm curious, because I thought the match was pretty good, it was pretty solid, but do you think the part of the reason that you were underwhelmed was because when Cesaro and Nakamura won, it didn't feel like a big moment that they'd won, and it almost kind of took you down a little bit because you weren't clamoring for Nakamura and Cesaro to become tag team champions.
You are absolutely right, Kenny. Yeah, it just felt like a team. I know Cesaro and Nakamura have been teaming for quite some time. This is not a new team, but this push does feel new. And it just kind of feels like they've become contenders by default because Morrison and Miz were ruined by Strowman at the previous pay-per-view. The Forgotten Sons have been forgotten about. And it's like there aren't any other tag teams that can, you know, realistically vie for the title that was then held by the New Day. So it just sort of almost feels like, well, we need a title change to try and drum up some interest in this feud that's really not very inspiring because it feels like they've been wrestling for 4 or 5 months, even though it's probably only 2 or 3 weeks. There was no journey, no chase, no real story. I mean, that's the whole problem with WWE at the moment. It just doesn't feel like anything's got any real energy. Well, the storytelling, apart from, I guess, Bayley and Sasha Banks, and a few other stories actually are doing all right, but a lot of them just feel so phoned in. Like there's no real effort gone into them. And this, you know, case in point, Cesaro and Nakamura became champs almost to make this, almost to prolong this feud and give this feud a reason to exist. Almost as like, and I think also WWE is thinking, well, hold on a minute. If New Day retain against Cesaro and Nakamura, who are New Day going to face next week? And I think that would have been a factor as well in the decision to take the title off them and put it on Cesaro and Nakamura, because now at least it gives them a reason to continue wrestling.
Nakamura for me is the issue. You know, I was podcasting with Sandra on Patreon about the show. And Sondra made a really good point about Cesaro. She would say, you know, he's a great tag team wrestler. He's been with The Bar, with Tyson Kidd in the past, with obviously in Kings of Wrestling before he got to WWE. And I think he is a really great tag team wrestler. I just hope that if Cesaro can make Nakamura care about the job that he has, that would be nice. Because I just feel like he doesn't care.
Yeah.
Every time.
The enthusiasm, it's just long gone, hasn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you just
zapped out of him. But do you know what?
This guy was so great, you know. He really was.
Do you know what I will say, though, Finn? In the next match on the show, Bayley versus Nikki Cross at the SmackDown Women's Championship, I thought Bayley's selling was some of the best selling on the show.
Really?
Wow. I do.
I was just thinking that as well. Like there's an outstanding neck breaker by Cross on Bayley, and Bayley sold it so well, and Bayley took a DDT and a cross body block at ringside. You know, Nikki kicked out of the Bayley to Belly. You know, there's a commotion, and then the end Banks placed the boss ring, that like the brass knuckles, on Bayley's hand, with which she cracked Nikki and scored the pin. And then the heels cackled. They cackled. You know, their skullduggery had worked. But I thought this was really well done. I thought Nikki Cross was protected on the finish. I thought Bayley did a really good job in the heel role, where she looked vulnerable. She looked like she could have been beaten. I think Nikki's really done well. I always thought that like Alexa was the star of the Nikki and Alexa team, but it's absolutely Nikki Cross is the star of that team now.
Yeah, Nikki's just a different level. She brings a lot of intensity to her matches. I always look forward to seeing when she, you know, hooks her opponent into the apron bit, what they're going to do. It's always a fun spot. And you're right, like Bayley's just found her groove. She's just, you know, it's like somebody who's been trying to perfect their lasagna for like 10 years. And finally, it's like, it's not goopy anymore. The creamy consistency is right there. Like Bayley is the lasagna she has been trying to be for ever since she got in the main roster in August of 2016, a year after she should have come up when everybody else came up. She's just finally found that groove.
Absolutely. I mean, she knows it's her role to get in there and to make her opponents sparkle, and she does that almost every time. As I said earlier, yeah, maybe Bayley, Naomi. Let's just see what those two can do together.
See what they can do.
Yeah, really good night for Nikki. She was protected on the finish. I mean, I always thought it was Alexa who was going to turn on Nikki, but I think it now needs to be Nikki who needs to turn on Alexa. And I think the storyline should be along the lines of, Alexa, you used to be somebody, you used to care, and now you don't, and we are through, and then they can have a feud. So Nikki needs to turn heel. I think she can really do something as a heel in this company. I mean, yeah. Definitely. It's time for her and Alexa to split. They've done everything they can anyway as a tag team. And Alexa, to me, just oozes indifference these days. I just feel like she's...
Nikki is propping her up as an act, isn't she?
Yeah, absolutely. You can see Nikki wants it, and she wants to be better, and she wants to go further. And I think Alexa has realised that she peaked a couple of years ago, and that, you know, now she's just kind of riding Nikki's coattails and not vice versa.
Then we had the Eye for an Eye match with Seth Rollins and Rey Mysterio. This was the biggest pile of shit, but it was what I wanted. It was, the finish was horrific. It was so crap. Seth Rollins brought out a pair of big pliers, which I don't think you physically could not bring someone's eye out with. And in the end, we don't see anything. We're led to believe Mysterio's eyeballs come out the socket, and then Seth Rollins vomits on the floor.
Yeah. How exactly was his eyeball supposed to come out of the socket when Rollins shoved Ray's eye into corner of the ring steps? Wouldn't that have actually pushed the eyeball further into the socket?
One would think. What did you think of this match, Finn?
I mean, I thought the match in terms of what they did, because these two are really talented, it was okay. In fact, it was pretty good, but I couldn't take any of it seriously. I mean, to me, it was just a clown show. It's like these two, the whole point of this is that they're trying to extract someone else's eyeball in order to win. How the hell are we supposed to take that seriously?
Well, the other thing is, say you're going with it, right? You're going with the premise and you're trying to play along. So Seth Rollins, didn't he come up with a stipulation? Or no, it was Mysterio. So they do it, and it's like they're going to do eye for an eye match. Seth Rollins has known for a couple of weeks this is what the match is going to be. And then suddenly when he does what he's supposed to do and gets the eye out of the socket, he vomits. Like, you knew that was what was going to happen. If you won, that was the outcome. Watch a couple of videos on YouTube to get yourself ready for it.
Yeah, I mean, there was just no realism to it. The ending was... I just can't even believe that Ray agreed to this. Dominic? I mean, the whole... You know, I was been saying for weeks, Dominic's going to be recruited by Seth Rollins. He was nowhere to be seen. So it just feels like that whole aspect of the storyline is now diminished in importance. The fact that he wasn't there, and that was, to me, was the only saving grace of this match, was if Dominic had been involved and he had moved over to the dark side and joined Seth Rollins' crew, and he wasn't even at ringside.
Yeah, he only came out after. The thing that I don't understand, whether you like AEW, you don't like AEW, or whatever, this is the... I mean, Rey Mysterio has not signed a new contract. So they're in the position of negotiating. And this is your way of convincing the guy to stay? This? I mean, come on. It's so bad. Like, if I'm Rey Mysterio and I'm going, okay, where am I going to sign next? You know, what am I going to do? And then this is what they're giving you. It's not... I just can't believe that this is what they think is the best way to try and woo him to re-sign.
No, I can't understand why Ray would re-sign. The only thing I can imagine is that maybe they'll say, well, listen, you know, if you re-sign, you know, we'll give Dominic a push, you can team together, you can become tag champs, whatever. That's probably how they'll manage to retain him, if he does decide to stay, that is. And after this series with Rollins, I would not blame him for a moment if he were to leave, because I've just written here in my notes, totally dumb. That's what I thought the whole thing was. It was just, I just couldn't take it seriously. I mean, as they're there going for each other's eyeballs and trying to use a kendo stick to apparently, you know, poke someone's eye out or gouge someone. I mean, it's just like, there were so many different things they could do with this story and with this feud. Presumably this is the blow off. I mean, I'm not sure. I mean, they told us the next night on Raw that there is hope for Ray, and that the cord that holds the optical, what's the phrase they use?
Well, optical nerve or something.
Yeah, had not been severed. So he may make a recovery in time. Or perhaps Rey Mysterio will return for a, you know, to Jesus. See vengeance against Seth Rollins. But who the hell wants to see another match between these two after this? I don't. And like, and what would be the next stipulation? I mean, you know, does it get any bigger, an eye for an eye? And then they didn't even, you know, they didn't, at the end, they didn't even honour the stipulation. And then the next night on Raw, they were trying to tell us on commentary that Rollins had extracted Rey Mysterio's eyeball, which he hadn't.
My favorite thing is, like, so an eye for an eye match. What's next? A murder match? Like, where the loser has to die? What do you do? it's so grim. I mean, look, I loved it because it was so shit. But and also it's like the whole match, though, they're wrestling this good match.
Yeah.
Because they're trying to have a good match. But the problem with having a good match with these stipulations is that you look stupid for having a good match. Because it's like, you're supposed to be trying to take his eye out. That's what you're supposed to be doing. It was a shit show.
Well, I mean, they've got to do moves, haven't they, to soften each other up before. So
they do, but I mean, how long did Rey Mysterio run at Seth Rollins with a big kendo stick in the hopes of jabbing his eye?
Well, I mean, you know, the thing is, the Sandman and Tommy Dreamer had this feud back in 94, I think it was, where the Sandman had supposedly lost the vision in his eye in this incredible angle that ECW did. And they just did it so well. And this was just absolute garbage. I mean, Rollins at one point did a Falcon Arrow on the ring apron. And that looked tremendous. I mean, what a move. But it's like no one's really selling anything for any length of time anymore, apart from when Ray had his, you know, eyeballs shoved into the corner of the ring steps. So, I mean, this should have been one of those matches where the guys were really selling everything and getting weary and becoming weaker. And it should have almost been more like a fight rather than a match. I do get your point there about, you know, they're doing these spectacular moves and everything. And why aren't they having a fight? Why are they doing all these crazy spectacular moves when the object of the match is to extract one of your opponent's eyes? So I do get that. But I think, yeah, there should have been more sort of fighting elements. And maybe they should have fought up the ramp and maybe into the back and, I don't know, done some other different things. But I mean, I couldn't take it seriously. And I just thought the whole thing was just like, why is this happening? And whose idea was this stipulation? And in hindsight, how can anyone think that it was a good idea? Yeah, really, I just don't know what to. I don't know where it goes from here. I don't see how Seth Rollins was enhanced. I don't really see how Rey Mysterio is going to have any more sympathy if he does return. I don't see what this did for anyone, apart from you, Kenny. You were amused by it, at least.
I was amused. At least there was that. I mean, but then we have the match of the night with Asuka and Sasha Banks, which was just tremendous. And then the finish was just not... It was garbage. It was like, it was, and they had so much good, even like, you know, the spot with Asuka doing the mist and it goes in the referee's eyes. That's all good stuff, but you just finish by, is Sasha the champion? Is she not? The finish did not work. And I think this show suffered the most from the booking rather than the actual quality of the wrestling. But what did you make of the match?
Yeah, I really enjoyed the match. I mean, this was like the, you know, this was like the antithesis of Rollins versus Mysterio. I mean, one thing I really liked about this was there was all these desperation covers. And it was as if they were really trying to beat each other, you know, not put on some gymnastics display. And yes, that is a shot at a certain team in AEW. So, I mean, it's just like, I just
that's going to be your T-shirt. Yes, that's a certain shot.
Yeah, so, I mean, I just thought this was tremendous. And it just felt to me like a match in which winning was all that mattered. They weren't there trying to entertain us. They were there trying to have a match and to defeat each other. And that there is, again, it's Finlay stating the obvious, but that doesn't happen that often in wrestling anymore. It's just like, well, these two really showed that you could have a hell of a match that's entertaining whilst, you know, they never losing sight of the objective, which is to defeat the other person. I mean, I didn't really mind the finish. I can understand why people would dislike it because it was silly. But to me, it was a way of furthering this program, getting the title belt around Sasha Banks's waist without her, strictly speaking, winning the championship and prolonging this feud. And best of all, Kenny, best of all, you know, you're saying that there's, you know, every cloud has a silver lining, even to you. It also led to the return of Stephanie McMahon on Raw.
Great. So happy. So, we didn't even get her theme tune. Just get her on Zoom. Anyway.
Yeah, so I mean, Bailey was involved and then Asuka accidentally blew the green mist into the referee's eyes. He tumbled outside the ring. Bailey took the referee's shirt off the referee. She put it on. And then after clobbering Asuka with one of the title belts, Bailey counted Banks's cover on Asuka and then presented her with the title belt. So Sasha is now the Raw Women's Champ. Well, she's not, but she's carrying around the Raw Women's title belt. It's a disputed finish, which they are going to resolve next week on Raw, as Stephanie McMahon stated on
Raw
which
night.
Took place this past Monday. They're going to have a match next week because obviously, Sasha Banks didn't genuinely, properly, or, you know, she didn't legally defeat Asuka. But then, of course, Asuka didn't retain the title either. So it's a inconclusive outcome, and they're going to settle it next week on Raw. So I didn't really mind it, Kenny.
When you have such an epic match, you just want a decent finish.
I do get that, but at the same time...
It's not Raw. I think it was also like the idea that, like, so when Bailey puts the t-shirt on, she makes the pinfall. She has no, you know, it's not like she's Vince McMahon who can put on a referee shirt and do a count and it counts. And then why did the truck just play Sasha's theme tune? Is that them? Because the truck would know more than them. She hasn't really won the title. I think it just makes you start questioning it more than I think that you would want to. And that's when it gets, for me, it just gets a bit messy.
Yeah, I mean, you are right, of course. I mean, it's not, on a pay-per-view, it's not a credible finish. And on pay-per-views these days, we want clean finishes mostly, or we want a proper finish.
Or a clever shenanigan finish.
Yeah, and this kind of, in a sense, sort of does feel like a bit of a cop-out, but it's a while since they've done anything like that in WWE.
True, they've not done it in a while, so I guess they can maybe get away with it. I think it was just, I liked the match a lot. The finish, I thought, was just a bit naff, but it didn't ruin the match for me or anything. I know sometimes people if they don't like a finish, can't get over it. But it was fine.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it was better than a DQ or a count out. That would have been worse. They did put some effort into the finish, and it will lead to a rematch next week on Raw, which, if it's as good as the match at Extreme Rules, you know, that's going to be something to savor. And hopefully that will have a finish, and that will clear up the controversy. But I can understand why they didn't want to beat Asuka, and I can understand also why they didn't want to beat Sasha. And this is, again, all part of the Sasha and Bayley feud. And I think in that match next week, I think we will, you know, maybe that see the wedge getting driven, you know, the wedge reappear and start to be driven between Bayley and Sasha. And we'll see, you know, the seeds of the split planted. We will see. I mean, it just seems like that's kind of off the boil now, doesn't it? That's been simmering for a while. And I think, you know, instead of being on 4 or 5, you know, we were talking about this a while ago, what temperature, you know, is the tension on? It seems like it's maybe not even on 1. Like they've been getting a lot, it's been harmonious.
It feels like they're taking it, they're, you know, maybe the idea before was to blow it off at SummerSlam. Now the idea is not SummerSlam, so they're putting it down again. I'm open to keeping going, though. I think it's a good partnership, and they should keep it going. And hopefully, you know, if they can get this, the big match, say it's even Survivor Series, in front of some people, yeah, it would be really good. So
it would, yeah. And you've got to applaud WWE for
the slow and steady build.
Yeah, for recognizing that this storyline has got legs and that people really like it. So let's prolong it, you know, let's not cut it off, you know, in late July or August, because the original plan was SummerSlam. Let's ride this out and let's just see how much mileage there really is in this, and let's just go with it. So, you know, full marks to WWE for doing that, for being flexible enough to recognize, you know, a good thing and to maintain it.
Then we got Drew McIntyre defending the WWE Championship against Dolph Ziggler. The stipulation that Dolph picked was Extreme Rules for Dolph Ziggler only, and Regular Rules for Drew McIntyre. They went 15 minutes. Drew retained the title. Did they do enough to make you feel like Dolph had a chance? And what did you think of the match?
I think it was a pretty good stipulation. I still think that they should have announced it in advance, because they could have then promoted it more than they obviously did, because Dolph only just announced it before the match began. I thought the match was well done. I thought there were some really good spots in it. I thought Dolph's famouser off the announce desk on Drew looked really good. And in the end, it was kind of a desperation claymore by McIntyre on Dolph that sealed it. Also, you know, Ziggler had smashed McIntyre through a table. He'd used a move on a chair. And Drew kicked out again. You know, there's no handshake afterwards. I was kind of thinking, well, are we going to get like a SmackDown-style handshake, you know, with Styles and Riddle? Because Dolph really did push Drew to the limit. I mean, I know he exploited the rules that were in his favour, you know, in order to do that. But I thought Ziggler did give a good account of himself in the match. You know, I mean, for a guy that hasn't really done much for many months, he did show here that he can really put it together in the ring. You know, and McIntyre obviously sold a lot, and he, you know, he was at a disadvantage throughout. But I mean, I thought it was, I enjoyed the match. I don't think I was ever at any point under the impression that Dolph might win. I don't think there was ever any doubt in my mind over who was going to go over in the end. But yeah, I mean, it's, I don't know, it was kind of like...
It was underwhelming.
Yeah, it summed up a lot of this show where you can't really knock it, because the effort that went into it was you know, so Herculean, and people really tried to make the best of what they'd been given. But it still felt like you wanted more from it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think the problem was that there was just no point where you'd believe that Dolph was going to win. Dolph's stipulation kind of made him look like a bit of an idiot, because if he gets to pick any stipulation he wants, why didn't he grab like 5 guys and make it 6-on-1? Like, you know, there was nothing they could have done, though, to make you believe that Dolph Ziggler was going to win. And I think, I feel like Dolph, please, can we just put a GoFundMe together to pay Dolph Ziggler money for a year to not wrestle? And just not be on the show.
Well, but on Raw the next night.
Oh, no, don't. I know it's happening again. I can't handle it. I don't want it. Again. I reject it, Finn.
Yeah, well, there's going to be another match, apparently, and Drew's going to tell Dolph what the stipulation is right before they wrestle.
If Dolph loses, he has to leave WWE. Can that be the stipulation?
Please let it be that.
So, but the whole show was building to the main event, which was the Swamp fight with Braun Strowman and Bray Wyatt. Cinematic. There was a lot. They tried to bring in a lot of kind of old Wyatt family stuff. I'm led to believe by Sondra, who could tell you pretty much all of the Wyatt family canon that goes on, and she was saying there was a lot of attempts to explain stuff, but obviously they couldn't bring in former members of the Wyatt family. They had Alexa Bliss kind of as Sister Abigail. And they had a non-finish at the end where the Fiend kind of shows up. So I guess we're going to see how it plays out at SummerSlam. One of them might be dead. How did the main event work for you? What did you think?
It didn't really work for me. I mean, the cinematic match concept basically saved WrestleMania, and it's been pretty much downhill all the way ever. Well, no, that's not true. Money in the Bank enjoyed that, but I think all the other cinematic matches.
Diminishing returns.
Yeah, diminishing returns is the phrase. A lot of thought obviously did go into this, and there was a lot of the horror movie tropes. It was like Braun was lying down at one point and then looked up and saw himself. So was he his own enemy? I don't think we really were supposed to think that Alexa Bliss is Sister Abigail, just that he imagined, this was Bray using his powers of mind control to make Braun think that Alexa, Braun's longtime friend, is Sister Abigail. So, I mean, that was part of that. And there was, obviously a lot of effort had gone into the production of this with all the horror movie effects and things like that. And it was very tightly edited. I mean, at one point, someone caught on fire, and then they ended up in the swamp. And then, as you say, at the very end, the Fiend rose from the water. And that will no doubt lead to Braun versus the Fiend at SummerSlam, I guess. I don't think it really worked at all. I mean, I think in order for these matches to work, there has to be a match. And all these add-ons are peripheral to it. They're extras, they're add-ons. But you need a match that in order for it to work. Like, if you go back, remember the New Day versus Wyatt Family compound match from 2016, mm-hmm. I think that was, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yep.
That there was a match with a load of little horror movie extras tacked onto it. And that did work as a match. This really wasn't a match. I mean, at one point, after Braun had been KO'd by himself, he woke up in a chair and he's chained to a chair. And then Wyatt comes over and cuts this long speech. And it's just like, that to me felt like one of the big moments in the match was Wyatt's speech to Braun. And then Braun suddenly is released from the chains. Was he ever in the chains? Did he imagine that part of the match? Was he dreaming? Was that hallucination while he was KO'd? And then he's suddenly outside again, brawling with these guys, one of whom was set on fire when he fell into a fire. And then they ended up by the side of the swamp. And Braun nailed Bray, apparently knocked him out, put him in a boat, sent the boat off. Then the boat came back. And Bray's not in the boat, but then he appears from out of nowhere and beats Braun up with a paddle, I think it was. Was it a paddle, Kenny?
I think it was a paddle, yeah.
Yeah, with a paddle. And he's smashing Braun, but then Braun's not bruised or bloody or anything like that. So did Braun imagine that? Did that really happen? And then Bray ends up in the water and we've got a close-up of Braun and Braun says it's over. And then he gets dragged into the water and then a Fiend appears at the end. So to me, it didn't work at all. Because it wasn't a match. And you could say that also about Cena versus Wyatt from WrestleMania. But that there, to me, did work because that was the story of John Cena's career. So you had a story there with a start, middle, and an end. With this here, I don't even really know what it was that they served up. But had it been a match and all the horror movie tropes and, you know, extras, and had they been a smaller part of the overall package of the Swamp fight, I think it might have worked. But as it was, it just seemed like a disjointed sort of mishmash of horror movie, you know, cliches, and, you know, a little bit of fighting, and then the reappearance of the Fiend that's no doubt going to lead to a match at SummerSlam. So yeah, I was very disappointed by it, Kenny. I really felt like it could have delivered so much more than this. I think they could have done essentially the same thing, but given as a match. And maybe they were reluctant to do so because it might have been compared to the Boneyard match between Undertaker and Styles at WrestleMania, or potentially, you know, New Day versus Wyatt Family from 4 years ago. But I really feel like they could have given us a lot more here than they did. What did you think, Kenny?
Yeah, I thought it underdelivered. I thought the fact that nobody was talking about it the next day was a real sign that. I think the issue, I think, once we've seen it, was that because that Bray Wyatt was such a big disappointment, this just kind of felt like that. It felt like a big disappointment. You didn't have anybody there. You didn't have Harper and Rowan there to make it more interesting. It just didn't work. They tried, but it didn't work. I mean, overall for Horror Show Extreme Rules, if you were to, did you think it was a thumbs up show, a thumbs in the middle show, a thumbs down show?
I think it's, I don't know whether it's probably a thumbs down. Yeah, probably is.
It was, yeah, it really, the best match obviously was Asuka and Sasha, but yeah. The booking on the show was just dire. Really dire.
Yeah.
So, I mean, hopefully this was the kind of the slump before we get to, you know, the good of SummerSlam, hopefully.
Yeah, I mean, in some ways it did set, I mean, obviously it has set further matches up, future matches up, but I'm not really that excited. I mean, I'm looking forward to Asuka versus Sasha Banks, but I can't really think of any other matches that this show has set up that I'm really excited to watch. I mean, if anything, I'm less interested now in Fiend versus Strowman than I was. It just feels like they haven't really had a plan for Strowman from the start. I mean, I know he wasn't supposed to be champion. It was supposed to be, you know, Roman Reigns. But, I mean, they've had, what are we on now? Well, they've had nearly 4 months to come up with something for Braun Strowman. And this Strowman versus Bray Wyatt feud has been going on for several months now. And they've had a lot of time to come up with something that was more entertaining than this. You know, to get from, you know, Money in the Bank to SummerSlam, it just feels like it's been just wasted time to me, Kenny. It's like as if they've just been treading water, and it's like, right, what are we going to do to try and keep this feud going until SummerSlam? Oh, let's pick Braun versus Morrison and Miz. Oh, that'll give him a win, and no, that'll get him over. Oh, no, it didn't. And now we've got this match at Extreme Rules, the horror show, or the horror show Extreme Rules. It's just like, it's not doing anything for the Fiend, and it's not really doing much for Braun Strowman either. It's a shame, really, because you would think that these two could really put something together, and it just feels like they're kind of treading water, you know, pardon the pun, obviously not treading water because one of them went underwater at Extreme Rules. But
you know, therein lies the story for, you know, it didn't do much for The Fiend, it didn't do much for Braun Strowman, and Extreme Rules didn't do much for us, Finn.
It didn't, no. It didn't do much for any of us, really. So,
but listen, we're going to be continuing our conversation over on Patreon and the Overrun tomorrow, which will be us talking about Raw and also looking back at another issue of Power Slam from 2006 with Edge on the front. But Finn, do you have any plugs for the lovely listeners before we move over there to the paywall?
No plugs, Kenny. How about yourself?
Just the same old usual plugs. Patreon is obviously where we really need your support and appreciate all your support over there. patreon.com/insidetheropes. You can get this podcast 24 hours early. You can get an Overrun where Finn and I do talk more. We're actually recording later on today the Fully Loaded 2000 review with Sondra. Finn's doing a new article soon. So there's plenty of stuff over there to keep you entertained during lockdown. It's not really lockdown anymore. So plenty to keep you entertained in general.
And what a contrast between Extreme Rules and Fully Loaded 2000. My God, what a show.
Yeah, and you watched them in the wrong order. You really did. Also youtube.com/InsideTheRopes, a lot of stuff over there. Jim Cornette talking about the creation of the Kane character back in 1997. Really interesting clip there from one of our shows back in 2016. So, Finn, I hope that you enjoy whatever you're getting up to this week.
Yeah, and you as well, Kenny. I'm not going to bore the listeners with the details. thanks for listening, everyone. And we'll see you over on Patreon.
See you soon, everybody. If I'm sad tonight.